fresh from the Gravenstein Apple Fair, it's Chef John Ash in the KS Arto kitchen.
So wasn't that fun?
Isn't it fair? I'm just recovering from my overdose of apple fritters and apple pie. But it was worth every delicious mouthful. Mm. It was so much fun. Did you have a chance to walk around beforehand?
I did, yeah. This year, I think the food was even more interesting. I mean, it's always interesting. There are always interesting folks there, but there was kind of more diversity of ingredients and cultures.
Well, it was wonderful having and meeting Clint McKay with the indigenous Pomo Indian fry breads and his recipes that he did and set on. And that was his first time there at the Gravenstein. That was really exciting. I just thought it was a tremendous fair. And I had a great time judging pie, as always. And speaking of judging pie, the judges came up with, as always, a winning pie, and we are fortunate with having the baker of that winning pie on the KS Arto Live Line this morning, and that's Rose Brennan. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash.
How are you, Rose?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, you really knocked it out of the ballpark with your pie.
Thank you.
The blackberry butterscotch apple pie. And I have to tell you, I've been judging for 17 years, and I don't recall any pie winning the sweepstakes that featured nuts. So you've
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You actually broke the record here with having a hazelnut crumble topping. And I have to tell you also that I'm usually not a big fan of apple pies that have nuts in them. They either overwhelming or they're too small and they get caught in your teeth. There's all kinds of problems with using nuts to me in fruit pies. But somehow you incorporated the hazelnuts so beautifully that they really complemented the apple pie rather than fought it.
It looks like it's like a nice streusel or something topping.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with the recipe? And while you're talking, I want to tell our listeners that we have posted this recipe on the KS Arto website this morning. Folks can go to the website if you have a chance, and you can follow along as Rose runs us through the pie. So why start us off at the crust, anything, and how much experimentation you did to come up with this crust?
Sure. I've made this crust a couple times. It's an old recipe I found that has, you know, the usual suspects, flour, shortening, butter, but it also has an egg in it and apple cider vinegar, which I think really makes it flaky.
That's great. So you experimented with adding an egg and some apple cider vinegar, and I noticed you added some brandy.
Yes. So instead of water, I normally like to use apple brandy, but this year I just used plain brandy because I was going to have the blackberry butterscotch filling, so I didn't want to overwhelm the taste buds. So I just used plain brandy, and it worked pretty well, I thought.
And you use a food you say food processor. Is that what you used for the and it came together pretty well and was
It did.
Was able to roll out pretty easily too?
Well, the problem was it was really hot that day, and with the oven preheating, I think the temperature inside was over 100 degrees, and the crust kept melting when I was rolling it out. And so I kind of had to piece it together, and there was actually supposed to be a top crust, and I just couldn't get the top crust to roll out, which is how the crumble top came to happen. It was a complete accident.
Well, you're able to think on your feet.
Thank you.
The judges never thought that this was a last-minute substitution. Move us on to the blackberry brandy butterscotch sauce.
Sure. So last year, I made a pie for the competition that was just apple butterscotch. So it was just a regular butterscotch. And instead of water, I put in apple brandy. And so this year, I decided to change it up a little, so I used blackberry brandy in the butterscotch, and then I put in some fresh blackberries that I had picked also when it was cooking, and then mashed it up and strained it as it was cooling.
Wow, you really did a lot of experimentation with this.
Oh yeah, and I love butterscotch, so I'm happy to make butterscotch any chance I get.
Did the you use fresh or frozen blackberries on this?
Fresh blackberries that I had picked.
Right. And they didn't weep too much water and dilute the sauce too much?
No, I simmered it enough so it reduced.
Okay. Whipping cream, a little bit of corn syrup, brown sugar, butter, salt, vanilla extract, brandy, yes. and the blackberries. So we've yes. got the sauce taken care of, and now yes. the filling.
Yes. So the apples I just picked from my parents' backyard. They have some grafted apple trees. So it's kind of, some are Gravenstein apples and some are other varietals that I don't know exactly what they are. But yeah, just those apples and then some spices and the blackberry sauce.
Well, you make it sound so easy. why did you choose tapioca flour? Did you experiment with other thickeners?
I have. I saw Alton Brown on Good Eats years ago use tapioca starch in a pie. And I bought some and started using it in my Thanksgiving pies. And I really liked that it didn't make things kind of with that raw flour taste. It just completely mm-hmm. dissolves.
Yeah, and leaves a nice sheen to the apples also.
Exactly. So I thought with the butterscotch, that would be a good addition.
So that came together pretty quickly. And they are locally grown Gravenstein mm-hmm. apples.
Yes.
Which is very important
also. So you took this butterscotch
mm-hmm.
thing and combine that with the apples and the spices.
Yes, I just let it cool, and then once yeah. I sliced up all the apples and mixed those with the spices, and I put those in the pie dish and then just poured that butterscotch on top.
Okay, and then the pièce de résistance facing imminent disaster with a top crust that just wasn't going to work, you come up with this hazelnut crumble topping. Run us through that.
Yes. So that pie almost went in the trash. I had just, because that pie crust, I tried over and over and it just wouldn't work. So I threw the pie crust away and then I was just going to make a new pie crust and be up all night. And then I didn't have enough butter and I didn't have enough flour. So the pie was about to go in the trash and I thought, well, let me see what's in the freezer. And I saw a bag of hazelnuts in the freezer and I thought, I can work with this. So I didn't have enough brown sugar left, so I did half brown sugar and half raw sugar, and then just some flour, whatever butter I had left, which was dwindling fast, and some oats, and crushed up the hazelnuts, and it somehow worked.
I'm really in mm-hmm. awe that you're telling us this story about how this truly was serendipity, kind of came together at the last minute. And you didn't toast the hazelnuts before adding them to the crumble. I did not.
Okay. No.
Is that it?
I was in panic mode, so I didn't even think that far ahead.
How many times have you entered the contest before?
This will be my fifth year.
5 years. Wow. Have you won an award before in the previous 4 years?
Last year, I won first place with the butterscotch pie. So this year, I tried to up my game a little to get grand champion, and somehow it worked.
Wow. And what about, so where did you get your pie-making skills from?
Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in Healdsburg, and my grandmother was in Oakland. So on weekends, we'd go to Oakland to see Grandma, and I'd just be in the kitchen with Grandma. So we'd make apple pie was a staple, apricot pie, and chocolate chip cookies.
So it's in your genes. Mm. It's in your DNA.
Exactly.
Well, it really is a sensational recipe. Do you enter other cooking contests of any kind?
I have never entered another cooking contest.
Okay. Well, it was in the stars. It was astrologically your time.
So now you can wear that big belt with the big buckle.
Like the World Wrestling Federation.
I look forward to it.
Well, folks can access that recipe on the KSRO website, the blackberry butterscotch apple pie with the spur-of-the-moment hazelnut crumble topping created by Rose Brennan of Healdsburg, California, this year's grand prize champion at the 2018 Gravenstein Apple Pie. And Rose, we want to extend an invitation right now on the air for you to join us next August live at the Gravenstein to sit in with John and me, as we always do, talk pie for a little bit. And also you'll join me for the judging right after the show at noon, because you'll be invited as this year's winner.
Wonderful. I look forward to it.
Thanks for taking time out mm-hmm. to chat with us this morning. Great talking
to
you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Take care. Rose Brennan, pie champion. Mm. Isn't that wild?
It is really wild. It's the most, if you just saw this recipe, you obviously tasted the pies.
Sure.
You knew before you saw the recipe. But just sort of looking at it, it's the most unlikely kind of combination of ingredients, but obviously it works.
But I'll tell you, obviously you have to have a great bottom crust. She did. The filling was really good. But then that hazelnut crisp was so unexpected, and I think that boosted it to the top. Yeah. We'll change directions after this break. We're devoting the show today to lentils, a topic we have never covered in 31 years on the Good Food Hour. We've spoken about lentils, but we've never devoted this to one of the most popular pulses, I guess you'd call them, in the world. It's the Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, back after these messages.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News Talk Radio, 103.5, 94.5, KSRO.
Hi, I'm Noreen Evans. Since October, I've been fighting to help you recover from the wildfires. We all know that this will take hard work and a lot of resources, so I've asked Aaron Brockovich to join us to help. Aaron has fought PG&E before and has held them accountable for the harm they've caused in communities just like ours.
I want this community to know they are in for a fight. Over the course of the next several months, you will see me and I will be back for town hall meetings. People are always free to reach out to me anytime, aaron@brockovich.com. I'm here to help this community through this process.
Meet the team that Aaron Brockovich is working with and learn more about your legal rights against PG&E. Attend our next meeting, Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. at 70 Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa. For more, visit pgelawsuit.com. Noreen Evans of Watts Guerra LLP is the attorney responsible for the content of this advertisement.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market is bursting with wonderful fresh local fruits and vegetables from your favorite farmers and ranchers. Walker Apples is back, and master gardeners are available to answer gardening questions. Stop by the Beet Generation Farm. You'll find cucumbers, Romano beans, and Libby's own handmade pasta. Anna's Seafood offers a wide variety of fresh fish, and Strauss Family Dairy has a full line of dairy products, including yogurt and ice cream. The market now has, in addition to Two Rock Goat Cheese, Joe Matos and Pazzo Marco Dairy, showcasing their fabulous cow cheeses. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market has artisan foods ranging from fabulous bread, olive oils, marinades, tea blends, to hummus. Browse the artisan area for handcrafted gifts. Open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Results may vary, not a solicitation for legal services. If you owe the IRS back taxes, payroll taxes, or have not filed your returns, the IRS will get you. They can take your property, take you to court, even put you in jail. With one call to WAL, you'll never need to talk to the IRS again. Our average client settles for about 10% of what is owed. We offer free face-to-face consultations in your local area. Call 800-727-0433. That's 800-727-0433.
The documentary film Urban Inferno, The Night Santa Rosa Burned, has had its showings extended at the 3rd Street Cinemas in Santa Rosa due to strong public demand. The film, which dramatically chronicles those first 10 hours of last October 8th, shows at 3, 5, and 7 p.m. at the 3rd Street Cinemas through August 23rd. Tickets at the box office for $5 each, with all proceeds going to the Community Foundation's Resilience Fund. Underwritten by Gelati Construction Exchange Bank, Noreen Evans of Morrow Archer & Associates, and Teamsters Local 665.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, celebrating 31 years, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. And we thought we would salute lentils today since it's the 30th annual Lentil Festival up in Pullman, Washington. And we'll be talking to folks from that festival a little bit later in the show. But we also wanted to highlight a book that I really found fascinating. I read it cover to cover. It's called Lentil Underground, Renegade Farmers and the Future of Food in America by author Liz Carlisle. And Liz is on the line with us this morning. Thanks for joining us, Liz.
Oh, my pleasure.
So how did you get involved in the world of lentils?
I was born and I said, hey, lentils are my destiny. I never thought I would run into this passion for lentils. I am from Montana.
Oh.
And from a farming family a couple generations back, and my grandmother lost the family farm in the Dust Bowl. So, you know, I think that's where my passion for sustainable agriculture came from, is really trying to solve the problem that caused such tragedy in my family a couple generations back.
Well, you and what I, go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I learned was, you know, we're growing a lot of wheat in Montana, as is true in many other parts of the country.
And it's taking all of this fertility out of the soil, and we don't really have a good plan to put it back. We're mostly using chemicals, and they're based on fossil fuel, and, you know, after a few generations, you kind of run out of fertility in the soil, and you become really dependent on these chemicals. And so I ran into this amazing group of farmers out in the middle of nowhere in eastern Montana who realized that if they planted lentils in between their wheat crops, that these plants, because they're in the bean and pea family, could actually work with soil bacteria to convert atmospheric nitrogen into a plant available form. So basically put that fertility back in the soil that the wheat had taken out.
So you were working, I understand, for a U.S. senator for a bit, maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah. So that's how I found out about this, is actually that U.S. senator was an organic lentil farmer.
And you worked for him, and then did the idea that you wanted to learn more about this, or did it come like, this would be a great book? Which came first?
I wanted to learn more because my job in the Senate office was legislative correspondent for agriculture and natural resources. So I got all these phone calls and emails from farmers in Montana saying, you know, hey, this is what we're doing to try to be more sustainable, and here's the policy that you guys could work on to support us. And, you know, their stories were amazing. What they'd done was just so extraordinary that they'd, you know, done all this farmer science over 30 years to figure out these rotations and built their own processing facilities and markets. And they would invite me to come see it. But I was working in this D.C. office, and so I always had to say, well, no, you know, send me a picture. And eventually I said to myself, you know, I should actually take them up on this. And so that's when I started graduate school and decided this would be my thesis project. But their stories were so moving, and I didn't want to just turn that into an academic article. So that's when I started to think, this really needs to be a book, and it needs to be written like a novel, because that's what's happening here. This is a heroic human story, not just, you know, some sort of dry agricultural text.
So is this one of the things I think you touch on? What you touch on it several times in the book is the idea of the small farmer versus the big agri companies who are there. And is that true? That's true in the lentil business too, isn't it? It's being dominated by a few large growers.
You know, not so much large growers. It's more kind of further down the supply chain that the concentration is, and also before that. So it's the concentration is more in seeds, in agricultural chemicals, in processors, people who make these things into packaged food, and then in retail. And so it's not so much that there's great big farms. It's more that there's all these family farms squeezed in between these great big businesses that are selling them the inputs they need to farm and then buying their product. And they're barely getting paid enough for the product they grow to pay for the inputs they buy. So, you know, there are some larger lentil farms in Canada, which has gone kind of a more industrial route with lentil farming. The U.S., it's starting to get bigger, but the interesting thing about lentils in the U.S. is it really started as an alternative crop, and in many cases has retained more of that identity.
Talk a little bit about Timeless Seeds. Dave, this visionary who started about 30 years ago, this company.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dave is at the center of the story of the lentil revolution in farm country in Montana. And his story is that he grew up on a family farm in Montana. He went off to college, and he came back because he realized that the land was really the place to make a difference. He was a 60s hippie and, you know, was part of the anti-war movement and had read Silent Spring. And a bunch of his friends were wanting to go back to the land and didn't really have any family land to go back to. And he realized that he did. And so his dream was to, you know, make his whole farm run on solar energy, basically. So he started by literally putting solar panels on the roof of the farmhouse. but then he started thinking about how could the farm itself actually run on just the energy of the sun, you know, through plants and animals, rather than through fossil fuel-based chemicals. And that's how he figured out, well, the fossil fuel-based chemicals are necessary for this nitrogen fertilizer that we're relying on to grow wheat and barley. And so the way to get off of that treadmill is to instead use plants in the bean and pea family for fertility. And so we just started experimenting. with all kinds of different legumes, plants in the bean and pea family, and thinking about, you know, looking around the world at places with similar climates, and found that if you're in a short growing season and it's pretty arid, lentils are a pretty good fit.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, he didn't have anywhere to sell them. So that's where how Time with Seeds came about, is he and the three other farmers he initially convinced to grow lentils because it was good for the soil, they had to get together and get this processing plant and find markets so that they could sell them and then convince more of their friends to grow them because there was actually some place to sell them.
And this was the mention of French green lentils in Chapter 6. Have your seeds and eat them too.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, really finding a culinary premium market for this food. And, you know, it's people in our neck of the woods in California who really kicked that off, who were interested in eating more plant-based protein and experimenting with different ethnic foods. Those were the first customers, was natural food stores in California.
I think people don't recognize how diverse lentils are. You know, I bet if you ask the average guy on the street, it's like, oh, it's those little brown things that are there. But lentils come in all colors of the rainbow, and they cook differently. They have different flavors.
Yeah. Well, that's been one of the really fun things about doing this book and doing events around the book, is that I've gotten to eat so many different preparations of lentils from all over the world and all different varieties of lentils. You know, and in a place like India, they work with hundreds of different cultivars. Mm-hmm. And as you say, all different colors of the rainbow and sizes and texture. And you find them in, you know, every kind of dish and every category of the meal that you could imagine, from appetizers to desserts. So, yes, I've heard the, oh, that's that brown thing that goes in soup mm-hmm. before.
Right, right.
And then, you know, I'm like, no, let me take you to an Ethiopian mm-hmm. restaurant or a South Indian restaurant. And it's been fun to experiment with them in my own kitchen, too.
So we have to ask you, do you have a couple of favorite recipes for lentils?
I do. And actually, it's the Ethiopian dish, meserwat, that's become my favorite. And it's only like 5 ingredients. It's incredibly simple. You just basically saute onions with this Ethiopian spice blend called berbera. And then you add lentils. You add a decorticated lentil, so like a crimson lentil or harvest gold. Timeless grows both of those varieties because those will break down into more of kind of a stew texture more quickly. Mm. And so you just get this delicious, flavorful stew. There have been weeks when I've eaten that every night of the week.
Mm-hmm. There's 15 chapters in the book, Liz, but I want to jump ahead to chapter 8, and I want you to speak about the curious rise of the black beluga and how that came about and a chef that helped to popularize that.
Yeah, well, you know, that was an interesting story because Dave initially started trying to grow crops that he would just feed the soil. His initial idea was that rotating the wheat with the crops in the bean and pea family, what he would do in that rotation year was just plow those crops under for fertility, not actually sell them for people to eat. You know, after a while, he realized that wasn't going to work very well as an economic model, but he still had all these test plots of these soil-building crops on his farm, cover crops, many people call them. And one of them was this lentil that was jet black. And it had this interesting history. It had been grown by peasants in the former Czechoslovakia. The Russian Vavilov Institute had picked it up in their seed collection, and then it had made its way to the U.S. and the U.S. seed collection. And finally, this Canadian plant breeder had been developing it just as a soil-building crop. And the Canadian plant breeder didn't think anybody would ever want to eat it because it was black. And as you said, people expect lentils to be brown. And he tried making a soup out of it, and it turned gray, and he thought that didn't look very appetizing. So anyway, nobody thought this crop had a future as anything but soil builder. But Dave had tried eating it himself, and he'd fed it to some farm animals, and he thought it was pretty tasty. So this buyer who was interested in sort of exotic premium crops called him up and said, do you have anything new? And he said, well, I've got this black lentil, and it's not technically registered as a food crop, but it hasn't killed me, and it hasn't killed the pigs, and it hasn't killed the cows. So why don't you take a shot at selling it? And she got it in the mail. She cooked it not in soup, but just sort of in a kind of a saute version, and said, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. It looks like caviar. We'll call it Black Beluga, after a form of caviar. So that's the story behind Black Beluga lentils. And that was really the beginning, I think, of people in the culinary world in the U.S. thinking of lentils as something you could do something other than soup with, as this new culinary, something that chefs could experiment with.
So tell us quickly who Chef Blue Funk is from Big Fork, Montana, and why he figures into this story.
Yes. Well, he was the chef who really picked up the Black Beluga lentils and ran with them. He wanted to serve Montana-grown food in Montana. He has this restaurant just south of Glacier Park, and there's tons of tourists coming through. And, you know, they're there to see Montana, and he thought they should taste Montana, too. So, yes, of course, people often would order steaks and expect Montana beef, but he wanted to have a distinctive side dish that really was about what was grown in Montana. And so he picked up these Black Beluga lentils and for years served every single entree in the restaurant with this side of Black Beluga lentils.
It's a remarkable story, and we can't get to all the chapters, but it's remarkable. I knew nothing except my lentil stew recipe before really picking up your book and reading about it. And as you mentioned, it was not an easy nut to crack compared to all the designer, beautiful, charismatic vegetables and yogurts and ice creams at fancy food shows. Lentils kind of, people walked by the booth for a long time with not much interest expressed.
Yes, and I feel like, you know, finally lentils and these other pulse crops, their time has come. So, I'm trying to think of places in the Santa Rosa area, but there are a number of restaurants now that are getting into this. So check it out.
Yes. This is the year of the lentil.
Right. And they're and they're easy to cook. I mean, that's the other part of it. It's not something that is difficult to deal with. So try them.
Yes, that's true. Where, you know, it's not the cook the beans overnight kind of thing and plan a day ahead, you know. Half an hour and you're ready.
It's a good thing to remind people of. They don't need soaking.
Right.
And with that, we'll thank Liz Carlisle. She's the author of Lentil Underground, Renegade Farmers and the Future of Food in America. It's a wonderful book. Check it out. Thanks for joining us, Liz.
Thank you so much, Steve and John.
Pleasure talking with you. We'll be right back after this, and we're going to go to the 30th annual Lentil Festival in Pullman, Washington. This is the KSRO Good Food Hour.
FM Radio, North County 103.5, South County 94.5, KSRO.
At Bigham's 1 Hour Heating and Air, we know that homeowners can feel overwhelmed when needing to replace essential home comfort systems. We have a plan to reduce your stress and help you invest. You might be surprised to know that there are rebates up to $3,000 as well as tax credits up to 30% on Bigham's proprietary hybrid heating and cooling systems. These systems literally pay you when installed in your home. We do all the work submitting paperwork so that you can sit back and take full advantage of these rebates and tax credits. It's rare that these incentives would overlap in the way that they do right now, so don't wait. Tune it up or change it out. Call 844-5-TUNE-UP. Local, reliable, Bigham's 1 hour, 844-5-TUNE-UP. Get your existing AC running like a top for only $49, 844-5-TUNE-UP or 844-5-TUNE-UP.com.
This is North Bay Biz Country.
Can you hear it? There's a buzzword in healthcare on everybody's lips. The pros call it inflammation, and it can both help and hurt our bodies. This is Lawrence Amaturo, the publisher of North Bay Biz Magazine. We're your one-stop shop for hot trends, topics, and issues impacting Napa, Marin, and Sonoma, all in living color, each and every month. Our August health and medicine issue is no exception. We cover the topic of inflammation, the business of rare diseases, healthy workspaces, and how illness can just ruin your productivity. So give North Bay Biz a read this month. Your body will thank you, and maybe your wallet too. If you're not one of our 50,000 readers, get your free sample by emailing us at sample@northbaybiz.com. That's sample@northbaybiz.com.
Helping grow your business isn't just something we do, it's all we do. a member of the Amaturo Sonoma Media Group.
It's our salute to lentils. On today's KSRO Good Food Hour, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, as we go live and direct to the, I've always wanted to say that, the Lentil Festival taking place right now in beautiful Pullman. And on the line is Brittany Packwood. Hi, Brittany. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Steve Garner, along with John Ash, welcoming you to Northern California. Where exactly is Pullman?
Pullman is in eastern Washington, about 8 miles from the Idaho border.
And this is the 30th annual Lentil Festival.
Yes, it is. We're celebrating 30 and we couldn't be happier.
How much of the country's lentils are grown in that area of America?
About 18% is where we're at. Currently, back in the day when the festival first started, we grew about 25% in the U.S.
And so this is what you refer to as the Palouse region?
Yes.
And is that a family name, or how did that come about?
So the Palouse is actually a name for the region because of the soil that makes up the agricultural field. So there was the Great Missoula Flood way back when that brought all this wonderful, rich silt and soils into the region. Then we had big winds that created these wonderful, beautiful rolling hills. And they're just really great for growing. And so the soil is a louse, and so Palouse, Palouse, and that's how it got the name.
How many varieties of lentils are grown in the area? Do you have any idea?
In our area, I know that we grow Cardenas, Spanish, USA regular, and Red Chiefs. I know that we have a few other farmers that experiment with other lentils, but those are the primary ones.
So is this an industry that's growing? Are more lentils being grown every year?
In the United States, and even up in Canada, more and more farmers are starting to grow this crop. Depending upon what the varietal is, it's really adaptable to fields, which is really great for someone who's a rotational farmer. So it's something they can throw into their rotation, and it'll help actually reintroduce the nitrogen into the ground and if they rotate it in with other things. Like in our area here, canola is another rotational crop, so you'll see, you know, pulses, we do, garbanzos are big here too. So, you know, they might grow that for a couple of years and then some canola and switch off.
So I have a question for you, Brittany. How much of the 350 gallons of chili last night was left over? Was there any left?
Yes, there was some left, and I don't have a number on that yet. Our recovery team is still trying to calculate that.
It is the world's largest bowl of lentil chili?
Yes, I believe we've been surpassed now, but the bowl can hold up to 600 gallons. We obviously don't make that much anymore. But last night, I think we gave away almost 5,000 bowls of chili.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, my gosh. And these were free samples. Oh, you gave them away. It wasn't for sale.
Yep. Yep, we gave them away for free. And then anything that's left over, we take to a local community action center here where it's repackaged, frozen, and then distributed to different food banks in the area.
Marvelous. And the Emmanuel Baptist Church was involved in that, as always?
Yes, as always, they're the most wonderful hospitality we could ask for. They're fantastic to work with.
So did you have your lentil pancakes for breakfast?
Yeah, we did. And I think there are still some people over there trying to scarf down the last two.
So how do you make lentil pancakes?
Well, you just take your basic buttermilk pancake mix and add some pre-cooked lentils into it, and the lentils get caramelized through the cooking process, so it's a wonderful little bite in your mouth each time.
I see that there's a legendary lentil cook-off happening with five finalists, and my gosh, there's some serious cash involved here.
There certainly is. Yeah, $2,000 for the winner.
At the cooking demo, and that's taking place this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep, that's happening at 3, and the contestants are actually on their way right now to the cooking site to start preparing their dishes to present to the judges.
These are some wild recipes. Let me just read these off. Mediterranean lentil and eggplant crostini with a garlic yogurt drizzle. There's baked lentil empanadas. There's Seattle-style salmon bowls. Cinnamon lentil mini pies. And to me, I can't envision this, but caramel lentil cheesecake with cookie and cream trifle. John?
Wow. I know.
That's taking lentils where they've never been before possibly. Yeah. So are
well, that's what Little Fest is all about. You got to get creative with it.
And folks are coming from California, from Washington, from Maryland, and even from Greenfield, Indiana, as the finalists. And then there's the cooking demo stage. You have some local luminaries demoing different lentil recipes today?
Yes, we do. And the first one starts at noon.
I also love the entire food court idea. And any vendor, is this true, mandated to have one lentil item on their menu?
That's correct. Everybody has to have at least one.
And any of your particular favorites that you look forward to every year on from the vendor court?
Oh, so there's actually a new recipe this year from one of our returning vendors. It's a sweet lentil egg roll. And let me tell you, that's one of the most delicious things I've ever tasted.
I'm writing this down because John is shaking his head in disbelief. Sweet sweet lentil egg roll. So that's a new item this week. Okay.
What you're doing is you're helping people get beyond, we've been talking about it here, that so many people think of lentils just for soup, you know, and that's all you do with them. And I think you're pushing the envelope.
Well, they're so versatile. I mean, you can grind them up into flour. Mm-hmm. You can make beer out of it. People put it in ice cream. There's lots of things you can do with lentils.
Do you have any brewers that have made lentil-based beer?
There's a guy in Portland, Oregon, that has figured out how to brew with lentils.
Boy, you're blowing our minds this morning, Brittany. This is remarkable. It's today and tomorrow. If you want to do something fun next year, put down the dates. It's in August for the 31st Annual National Lentil Festival in Pullman, Washington. Brittany Packwood, thank you so much for calling us. It's been a real joy to talk with you this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a good time.
Great. Enjoy the festival.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we certainly will.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Some local chefs add their input on how to use lentils. That is the Good Food Hour continues live with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, on KSRO.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Mama loves to cook, and she's always calling me up and begging me to come over for dinner.
When are you coming over for dinner? I call, you never call.
And I know she'll spend all day making it, using only the best ingredients, carefully stirring the sauce, making sure everything is perfect.
I got up at 6 o'clock this morning to make your favorite sauce. I put all the...
And making sure that I know about it. I still haven't told her that I've actually found something better. La Vera Pizza. It's no wonder La Vera Pizza has won so many awards and the admiration and loyalty of their customers. They make their pizza just like Mama, with a hand-thrown crust. And La Vera Pizza has over 35 toppings to choose from. You'll also find calzones, superior Caesar salads, and pasta dishes that'll make your mouth water. Come on in and sit down, or order to go on 4th Street in downtown Santa Rosa, or call 575-1113. La Vera Pizza. It's so good, you won't want to tell Mama.
You need to eat.
DJ Sash and Glass is a full-service windows and glass family business that has served Sonoma County since 1960. DJ's makes it easy to replace your old, drafty, hard-to-open windows. Improve the look and value of your home with reliable, energy-efficient Milgard replacement windows. You don't have to worry about disposing of your old windows. DJ's Sash and Glass makes it easy to get your home improvement project done.
And shower doors and enclosures are just a phone call away at DJ's Sash and Glass. DJ specializes in custom shower doors and custom mirrors for your new or replacement bathroom project. Call DJ's Sash and Glass today for windows and your shower door replacement. Add a touch of class to your glass with DJ's Sash and Glass. 2985 Wilgin Court. Call 546-7344 and online at djsglass.com.
Hello, I'm Joyce DeFalla, the Assistant Minister at the Center for Spiritual Living. You may have heard our program, Spiritual Living with Edward Filyoun, a half hour of practical spiritual inspiration at 8:30 on Sunday mornings. We want to let you know that in addition to our Sunday morning services, we also have an informal Sunday evening service at 7 p.m. and a free one-hour class on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. For more information, please visit our website, cslsr.org. That's the initials for the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, cslsr.org. You can also give us a call at 707-546-4543. That's 707-546-4543. And don't forget, Spiritual Living with Edward Filyoun at 8:30 on Sunday mornings.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash, as we're joined by Chef Kathleen Weber from Della Fattoria in Petaluma, California. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing well. Chef John Ash is here.
How are you?
Good morning, John. And I have Kay Baumhefner, Chef Kay Baumhefner.
Oh, great.
Because this is actually her recipe.
Oh, wonderful.
That we're going to talk about this.
Well, it's funny. I was in Petaluma on Tuesday.
A little affordable.
I think I might even... And I wandered into Della Fattoria because I had not seen your new restaurant cafe. And I looked at the menu, and as I was looking, a beautiful plate of food came by as I was wandering around the dining room. And I thought, what is that? And the waitress said it was a beautiful salad with lentils and vegetables. And I looked at the menu, and I thought, gosh, we're doing a show on lentils. Why don't I have them on the show join John and me? Mm-hmm. So tell us about the beautiful salad that's on the menu.
Kay, I'm going to let you talk about that.
Hello to both of you.
Hi.
And the reason we decided to put this on the menu was to offer something that would be a very hearty, relatively low-carb dish that would also answer the need for something gluten-free. It also offers a complete protein, and it can be vegan if you don't put any butter, substitute olive oil in the aromatic vegetable sauté. So, and the other reason is because so many of us really love eating salads and sometimes need to have something that grounds our belly, that it's nice to feel like after you've had your salad that you've had a complete meal, but you don't feel heavy or bogged down. So we also offer this particular salad with an option side of a poached egg, if you want to go around that bend as well. And of course, I personally like to put the caramelized pork belly on it as well, but you know, we all have our passions. So anyhow, it kind of nods back to a classic. We added the potatoes because that does create a complete protein for people who don't get their protein from meaty things. That's always nice. And then also doing the aromatic vegetables separately and having that little vinaigrette, really citronette on the arugula, gives you that added veggie option. And I mean, I could go on forever. Cut me off. Ask me questions.
So the complete title of this dish is green lentil, new potato, and aromatic vegetable salad. Correct?
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. Exactly.
And we pretty much. I'm just going to digress a tiny bit because we've been listening to the show, and the way the lentils were spoken about kind of surprised me, because in my view, I've always considered them sort of a little gourmet item, you know, something that, that very sophisticated French people do. You know, they cook lentils and mix them with a little goat cheese and some citronette, and it's a salad, right? So we at Della pretty much always try to have lentils, whether we do it with a side of sausage or, you know, some other form. I don't think, I can't even remember us ever doing a lentil soup. Maybe we have, but not so much. But we're very proud to have lentils on our menu. So and I thought that your previous speaker, your author, was really really very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Liz was very it's an incredible story, and she's clearly very well informed, and that was I can't wait to read her book. I think Kathleen and I feel the same way, you know, about that. And one thing about lentils in terms of cooking them that I think a lot of times people don't realize, that it's best to start in cold water and to make sure that you're not overcooking them. So, and one of the reasons I think the green French green lentils, or the lentilles du puits, became so popular is that they could hold their shape and not go mushy. And they actually are sort of a muted green. And you can always cook them, and just like with the beluga lentils, you can cook them and then strain off the broth, which is still tasty. But if you don't want that color for what you're doing in the moment, you can always save it and add it to a meaty broth, something that would maybe have, you know, tomato in it, or darker beef brothy colors and so forth. So you don't, if you're in the waste not, want not frame of mind, that's a good way to use that as well.
So can I ask you, do you ever sprout lentils?
I haven't personally, but I certainly know people do. Uh-huh. How about yourself? Is that something you've played with?
It is. I went through a phase of trying to sprout everything.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And,
that makes
and
sense.
Some,
are you a hippie, John?
I think so. But lentils were particularly delicious sprouted.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
We chorus in. I guess we're going to be doing that soon.
Yeah, Put some of those on that salad.
So it would be
great.
It would be great. It would be a wonderful
thing.
I love it. Yeah.
So
you'll come in and see a change salad.
That's right.
Yeah.
and you'll say, you know,
always
that was...
Always fun to keep things evolving.
Yeah.
And John will say, you know, that was my idea. And everyone will go, yeah, sure it was, yeah. John.
Oh, no. Am I mixing up your voices? I hope not.
Yeah. No, the green lentil and aromatic vegetable salad, you could get that at a lunch menu at Della Fattoria, the cafe in Petaluma. This has been a while coming. Let's just digress for a minute or so. We know it as a world-class bakery. We used to buy breads and desserts and everything. And then you had this grand vision to expand and add the restaurant cafe, and that took a year or two to finally become a reality?
Two, and maybe a little bit more. Yeah.
Okay. And you've recently, in the past several months, added weekend dinners.
Right. Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
And John, you've gone to a couple
I
of
have.
Those, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, a couple times.
So, and
yeah,
that's fantastic. Is that doing well? Because I tried to get a reservation last week and I couldn't.
Oh, no.
No, but I mean, that's good.
If you dropped your name, we would have.
Well, no, I don't do that.
Remember that.
I play fair. Yeah. But it was really good to know that the dinners have been well received. So there's three different sections now. There's the bakery, and then there's kind of an employees-only entrance in the middle, and then next to it is the cafe. Is that correct?
Right. And I think people think we've forsaken our old cafe, but in truth, we're just waiting to get fire sprinklers installed.
Oh.
So we can open that to the public, and then we're not really sure how we're going to use that room. But the larger room that's to the left of the old cafe, if you're looking out onto the street, was originally going to be an event space, and then we ended up making that our dining room, and I'm so glad we did. My daughter Elisa did most of the decor in there, and you know, honestly, it's done mostly with found items, and a lot of things were built by... She's built most of the tables with the staff's help. So it's a very personal little space, you know.
Well, it's a wonderful, happy, happening space. People are very upbeat and a lot of energy.
So the weekend dinners are Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
Start with Thursday.
And you can go on.
I think weekends in the new era are starting on Thursday.
Okay. And so
those are also an a la carte menu.
Yeah,
as opposed to a prefix. So there's a lot of choices, and you can create your own little or a lot, and it's a lot of fun to play with.
Well, we're going to post the green lentil and aromatic vegetable salad so people can do that on the KSR website. Encourage people to check out De La Fattoria. If you don't want to make it, go down and get it at the restaurant. And where are you located?
We are at 143 Petaluma Boulevard North, Petaluma.
Kathleen Weber and Kay Baumhefner, thank you so much for joining us on our Salute to Lentils today.
Thank you.
Thanks to both of you.
Our pleasure.
We love this. Thank you so much.
Great talking with you. 636-1350. If you have a question about lentils, you have 30 seconds to talk to John Ash. We're also going to post my wonderful Turkish lentil soup, Mersimek. And this quick story about this is I went to Turkey back in 2009, and I attended a private cooking class in a local woman's home, which was located across the street from the ancient ruins of Ephesus. And before the class, we shopped for the ingredients in the central market of Kusadasi. And although I don't remember her name, I have the picture of her up on the website.
It's
which
the
I
sweetest picture. So is that on the website?
That's on the website.
Great. Okay.
And her delicious lentil soup recipe that we cooked that day, and I still continue to cook. So that's up right now on the KSR website. And I have a few other little suggestions on the bottom that I added about if you can't find red pepper paste, you can try harissa. Mm-hmm. And then I also write that I use an immersion blender for the smooth texture. And then I also write that if you want to make a sauce for couscous, you can use the same ingredients, but don't add so much liquid and don't blend it. And you can also add some raisins and chickpeas to the sauce. So those are my little additions
Sounds
to
delicious.
That. Then we just added your recipes, John Ash.
A couple of recipes. Yeah.
Which there's spicy lentils, a delicious served cold as a salad.
Uh-huh.
With greens or hot as an accompaniment. And then we're also adding your simple Mexican lentil soup. And what makes it Mexican?
You say arriba.
As you're
cooking it. It is actually a recipe that I encountered in Mexico. They eat a lot of, they eat more than beans in Mexico.
And you also add some queso añejo or crema, the Mexican cheeses, to this recipe, which is just lovely. You bring the soup to a boil, cover it until the lentils are tender, and seasoned to taste with salt, pepper, and then a sprinkling of the cheese is on top.
It's very simple.
And then you also have a black lentil salad with feta cheese and cumin, kind of a Mediterranean Greek-inspired recipe, which we'll add also. And you have a cumin vinaigrette that's served with that salad. So we've already added those to the KSR website so people can get going on their lentils.
Yeah.
And I also want to do a shout out for another great lentil-inspired dish created by Chef John Franchetti, who has a restaurant here in Santa Rosa on Dutton Avenue. It's a stuffed red pepper, and it's stuffed with lentils and oven-roasted golden beets and spaghetti squash. All these are roasted in the oven beforehand, and sweet potatoes. And he also uses a little feta cheese and a champagne vinaigrette. And it's on his all-day menu. I've had it a number of times, and it's really a delicious dish. And John sent us the recipe. We're not going to have a chance to go through it, but we may be able to post it. But you can go to Franchetti's and get this anytime. So thanks to John Franchetti and also Kay Baumhefner and Kathleen Weber from De La Fattoria for sending us their wonderful recipe, which is on the website. Well, I think we covered lentils
more than you wanted to know about lentils.
Well, it was amazing in Liz Carlisle's book, she mentioned that still so much of the country has no idea what to do with lentils. They would look at it and have not a clue about how versatile and nutritious
this
legume is.
Most people have a package of lentils in their pantry and they don't know what to do with it.
Well, maybe this show will inspire people to get out there and cook some lentils.
Yeah.
And also, I brought in a book, we don't have time to reference it, but one of our favorite authors is Saver Saran. Mm. He's written a book called Indian Home Cooking as well as others. And he said something so funny. He said dal, which is the equivalent, he said, it's my equivalent to chicken soup. It's what I eat when I need something comforting, something to remind me of my kitchen in India. So certainly any India cookbook almost will have wonderful recipes for lentils, too. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Join us next week. I'll have Peter Reinhardt in the KSRO kitchen to talk about his upcoming book on the great pizza of Detroit. He's a madman when it comes to pizza. Stick around. Clark Wolf at the table follows the news and then more good listening this afternoon. I'm Steve Garner from the KSRO kitchen with Chef John Ash. This is KSRO.